Tonight's reading is taken from John chapter 21, verses 9 to 19. It's on page 1094 in your church Bibles. When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went abroad and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, "Follow me."
Renola, thank you very much for reading for us. Thank you to Louisa for praying. I found myself this week thinking a bit about my childhood. The reason why I started thinking about my childhood was basically because of the weather outside. Now, prior to the last 2 days, and I could talk about snow, but we're bored of the snow already. So prior to the last 2 days, this week, I think you could characterize with miserable, grey, drizzle. That was the weather. It was very British in lots of ways, and it took me back to my youth. In particular, it took me back to Saturday mornings when I was at school. Saturday mornings on the school playing field, playing rugby, and certain memories associated with that also came flooding back. The missed conversion with the last kick of the game, the flicked pass that put David Goldapple straight down the wing to score in the corner. Winning against, I think it was Bushy. The incredible biased ref wearing the green jumper when we played against St Albans. Scoring a try in the corner myself, then skimming over the mud and the puddles and being unable to stop and like finding myself about 30 yards beyond the pitch, but in great joy. You see, each of those memories was a moment of great triumph or disaster. A memory which is kind of indelibly marked into my thinking. But the thing that brought them back was just something really simple. It was the weather. And I suspect that's true for many of us. We do have memories that are suddenly triggered by our senses and experience. So maybe it's the smell. A smell, for example, of a reminder of your grandmother's cooking. Maybe it's the sound of a piece of music that takes you back to when you were revising for your GCSEs or when you were married, your first kiss. Maybe a road trip you had. Maybe it's the glimpse of a photo that reminded you of a place that was special in the past, a place you visited. Could be a taste of something that you've not tasted or eaten for years. And in those moments, suddenly, we find ourselves transformed and translated into a completely different place. Our senses become excited. Suddenly, we're in a different time and a different place. So picture this scene. Fishermen. Tired after a night on their boat. They come into shore and discover that someone's preparing breakfast for them. They see a charcoal fire on the beach with fish laid out on it. There's some bread there too. The host is Jesus. I'm sure they're all pretty super excited to see Jesus. I mean, after all, probably a few days later, he died. This is the third time that they'd seen him since he'd been on a cross and since his resurrection. And Jesus takes some of the fish that they caught that night, he cooks them up, and he gives it to them, his disciples. Now, you'd think that was going to be a super, super exciting moment for everybody, right? But there was one man there who I suspect was struggling to swallow any mouthful of fish, any crumbs of bread. And it wasn't because of the food. It was because of the smell and the sight of a simple charcoal fire. That charcoal fire brought memories flooding back for him, recent memories, painful memories. Come back with me just a few pages, a few weeks in Peter's life to John chapter 18. And we're going to have a look from verse 15. Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. But Peter stood outside at the door. So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to the servant girl who kept watch at the door and brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, "You also are not one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I'm not." Now the servants and officials had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself. Verse 25. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So they said to him, "You also are not one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I'm not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had earlier cut off, asked, "Didn't I see you in the garden with him?" Peter again denied it, and at once a cock crowed. You see, as Peter stood on that beach in the warmth of the charcoal fire, his mind would have gone back to that earlier day and his actions then. The time when three times he was asked, "Aren't you one of that man's disciples?" as Jesus was led off to be crucified. And three times he said, "I'm not." This was, if you like, Peter's darkest hour. A memory he couldn't erase from his mind. So fresh, so painful, so disappointing. Because he basically let his best mate down. We see earlier in John chapter 13 that Peter had promised to go even to death with Jesus. He said, "Look, Jesus, I'll come with you wherever you go. I will go too, even to death." And Jesus says, "You won't be able to. In fact, three times you'll deny me before a cock crows." That's what happens, right? The once proud, confident Peter, when Jesus was at his most vulnerable, Peter, who promised to die with him, denied him because he feared what people might do to him. And that morning around the charcoal fire, Peter was having breakfast with the man he'd denied. The man he betrayed last time he'd stood by a charcoal fire. So the question is, how will Jesus respond to the emotional wreck? How will he react to a failure disciple? What will he say to the man who denied him in order to save his own skin? Now, what I want you to do is I just want you to chat with the people around you. Two questions that I want you to think about. The first is this. What kind of emotions, what kind of things do you think are going around in Peter's heart and mind at this stage? How do you think he's feeling? Second question is this. In fact, why don't you guys think about that? How do you think Peter's feeling? Second question is this for you guys over here. If a close mate let you down when you were at your most vulnerable point, how do you think you would react? What would be your emotions? What might be your actions? Okay, so you're thinking, how do you think Peter's feeling when he's on the beach there with Jesus? You guys are thinking, well, if you've been let down in the way that Jesus had, how would you feel? How would you react? Just have a chat with the people around you. I'm afraid I'm going to break into conversations. You may feel like you've only scratched the surface. You may feel like you've delved into the depths of your psyches. But it'd be useful, it'd be interesting actually to hear some of the things that you're thinking. Especially if you think, how would I react in that circumstance? If you're kind of thinking, I don't really want to share how I'd react, because then people might be a little bit kind of, just pretend it's the person next to you that was thinking that. But firstly, what do you think? How do you think Peter, or maybe you've found yourself letting somebody down in the past? What kind of emotions, what kind of things do you think are going through his heart, his mind? What sense do you get of him at that stage? I'm asking you guys, because you are the ones that were discussing this. They haven't got a clue at the moment, but what are your thoughts? Regrets, shame, yeah, guilt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Worried about what's going to happen.
I'm worried about what the rest of the disciples at breakfast are going to think of them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he feels probably pretty annoyed with himself. Great, thank you very much. That's how he's feeling. Now, how do you think you would react in that kind of circumstance? And it might be what you might like to think you'd do, but what kind of things are going to go through your mind at this stage? What? Somebody's really let you down really badly. Someone you trusted. What are the kind of thoughts that were going through you? Thank you, Peter. Yeah. What can I do to help them to feel what I felt? And ideally, a little bit more than I felt. Thank you. Any other thoughts? Yeah. Brilliant, Tabitha. I think that's absolutely right. That's really helpful as well. The temptation that we have just to ignore the situation, I think that's probably potentially going on with both sides, a temptation, given that they're on a beach, to bury their heads in the sand, almost literally, and pretend that what had happened hadn't really gone on. Those are really, really helpful, because I think that helps us get under the skin of what's going on here, and to actually see just how miraculous what follows is. So come with me back into John chapter 21, verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Now it's fair to say the kind of "these" is a little bit ambiguous there. They're all still on there on the beach. It could be that Jesus is saying, "Do you love me more than these fishing nets and the job or the work that you used to do? Do you love me more than that?" Or it might be comparing with the disciples. "Do you love me, Jesus, more than you love the rest of the disciples?" Or it could be that just as you boasted when you were sort of before your failure, "Do you think that you love me more than the disciples love me?" It could be any of those things. I think it may well be the latter, because of the way that Peter had boasted of his love for Jesus. But essentially the same question keeps on coming back, doesn't it? "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" The bottom line is he wants to know if Peter really does love him. Three times he's asked, "Do you love me?" Each time the question was asked, Peter is saddened And you see, when the third time Peter is asked, he is grieved. Peter was grieved because Jesus said to him a third time, "Do you love me?" I just sort of wonder about this element of Peter's grief. Why is it that Peter is grieved? Well, I think there's three reasons why Peter's grieved. He was deeply hurt by that repeated question, wasn't he? It wasn't that Jesus wasn't listening to the answer, but every time he was asked, once, twice, three times, was corresponding to every time Jesus had been denied by Peter. Once, twice, three times. And in asking three times, Jesus showed Peter that he knew exactly what had gone on that day around the charcoal fire in the temple's court. He knew of every conversation that Peter had had, of what Peter had said, even though Jesus himself wasn't there. And so Peter, faced with the reality that Jesus knew exactly what had gone on, knew that he couldn't pretend that it hadn't happened. He couldn't suppress his guilt. He couldn't avoid the conversation because Jesus had opened it. And so the third time Jesus asks, "Do you love me?" his grief is evident. His denial is exposed. He couldn't hide it. Jesus knew Peter's heart. And this is as true today as it was then. Jesus knows your heart. All of our hearts here today. He knows my heart. He knows the things that we've kept to ourselves, the things we're embarrassed about, the things we feel guilty of. Jesus knows every single one of them. We can't hide them from him. And that might make us all feel really uncomfortable today. Because I know that for many of us, those things that we're embarrassed about, we struggle to live with even ourselves. Jesus knows them. But at the same time, he doesn't want us to try and hide them from him. Jesus knows Peter's denial. Secondly, though, Peter's humbled. Remember, Peter had boasted of his love for Jesus, love that he thought exceeded all the other disciples, love that he said was strong enough even to take him to die with Jesus. And now, before all the other disciples, his boasts were shown to be mere words. He thought his willpower or his love would be sufficient in the most difficult of circumstances, but he failed in the heat of the moment. The thing that I think proud people struggle with most, and we were talking about this with Mark earlier on, is that pride always does tend to come before a fall. That's a Bible phrase. You see, pride comes before a fall, and the thing that proud people fear is that moment when we're exposed, when actually people see the reality, when we're humbled. I mean, the wonderful thing is, we love it when it happens to somebody else, but you never want it to happen to you. Pride comes before a fall. And certainly Peter fell, and he was humbled. The third reason I think he's grieved, though, is because he'd hurt a loved one. Peter's upset not because he doesn't love Jesus, but precisely because he does love Jesus. He's not grieved just because he's been found out. He's grieved because he let himself down and he let down somebody whom he loves. I think the things that we would all be able to say are that the things that hurt us most are the times when we hurt those who are closest to us. You'll know that if you've ever hurt a spouse or a family member, it hurts much more than hurting a stranger. But Jesus knows that. And so when Peter is utterly, utterly grieved, that's actually evidence for Jesus that Peter does love him. Jesus knows that anyway, but I think pastorally, just to kind of bear this in mind, if you find yourself in a position where maybe you at work, people are talking about Jesus and you really want to say something and you don't and you feel terribly, terribly guilty for it, maybe really upset. The upset that you experience is actually evidence that you love Jesus. If you weren't upset about the fact that you didn't stand up for him, then it shows that you don't really care. So be encouraged if you want, if you struggle to stand up for Jesus in a difficult environment. If you're grieved when you don't. If you weep when you don't. Because that's what Peter did. And that was evidence of his love for Jesus. You see, I think this conversation shows that Peter didn't deny Jesus because he didn't love him, but actually because his confidence lay in his own ability to withstand pressure. Peter's proud boast in himself had proven hopelessly inadequate when faced with a pressure cooker of a situation. He was powerless to do anything, even though his love for Jesus was strong. It was insufficient. But he knows, ultimately, doesn't he? He says it, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And that for Peter is reassuring. And so must Jesus' response to Peter have been. Because our temptation all the time is to want to make other people feel as we felt. To make them realize just how much pain they caused. Maybe that's what we expect. Maybe we expect some sort of extreme disapproval. It may be that that's what you might expect God to do to you. But Jesus isn't that kind of man. Jesus does the opposite of what we'd expect. Instead, he says to Peter, "Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep." The ultimate failure becomes the ultimate leader. The time was coming when Jesus would go back to heaven and Peter would have to take on a leadership role. What's the role? It is to feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. You see, those sheep, those lambs, they're still Jesus's. But Peter has a role for caring for them. From the youngest to the eldest, Peter will look after them, to tend them, to feed them, to care for them, to shepherd them. And so these lambs, these sheep that Jesus is talking about, they are the church, God's people. And Peter is to do everything that is necessary for them. Isn't this an amazing turnaround, though? Well, whilst eating breakfast, Peter was there dwelling on his failure. But now, he's forgiven, he's restored, he's reconciled, and he's useful to God. His experience is one of grace, one of kindness, one of love. And that is what the God of the Bible is like. Gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. But notice too, there's going to be a cost for Peter. Have a look at verses 18 and 19. "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. You see, there is going to be a cost for Peter, isn't there? And in the final two words of verse 19, after saying this, he said to him, "Follow me." Just briefly flick back to John 13, verse 36. Simon Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered him, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterwards." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the cock will not crow till you have denied me three times." You see, at that moment, Jesus says, "You can't follow me. In fact, you're going to deny me." But in this moment on that beach in John chapter 21, Jesus says, "You asked if you could follow me, and I said you can't. Now you can." now you can follow me. The future for Peter wouldn't be easy. It would end with him being dressed and led by the hand somewhere he didn't want to go. It would end in death. History records that Peter was crucified for his faith in Jesus. He really did follow Jesus. He followed Jesus in the way that he promised all those days before. But now is the time he was able to, because he'd been transformed by the grace and the kindness of God. You see, the self-reliant boaster realized that he could never do on his own what his willpower would enable him to. You see, he needed rescuing. He needed transforming. He needed being changed on the inside. And he learned that and experienced it through the very difficult failure and subsequent restoration. So as an aside, I think this gives us a sense of the kind of people that God uses. God will not use proud, self-sufficient, arrogant people. And I say this as someone who struggles in this way. God will not use those kind of people because they will be unfruitful for him because they rely on themselves. That's what Mark was saying earlier on. But I find in my experience that there are times when I'm humbled by God so that I might learn to rely on him more. God doesn't use strong people. He uses weak people who've experienced the strength of his love. But there's more in that phrase, follow me. Because Jesus doesn't ever ask his followers to go anywhere he hasn't first gone. Jesus has already given Peter the supreme example of what it is to be shepherd of his people. Yes, he spoke to people about God. Yes, he taught them to know God. Yes, he taught them even how to worship him. But Jesus said these words, I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. The picture is of a shepherd who cares so much for his sheep that he won't exploit them. He'll protect them and he'll serve them to the extent that it puts him in the firing line in order to save them from danger. And that's what Jesus does for people, not physical sheep, but people like us. If anyone's here, a Christian here tonight, then it's what Jesus did for you. Jesus realized that our greatest danger is from ourselves. We began thinking, didn't we, about memories. I suspect we've all had moments where we can look back with huge embarrassment and guilt. Moments that pain us to remember. Moments we carry around with us, maybe even hidden in the back of our minds, but ready to emerge at any point. The guilt of those things isn't eroded over time. We still feel terrible about what we did and how we've hurt others. We don't want to think about those things, but then think about your attitude towards God. Any moments like Peter where you've ignored God, rejected him, lived as if you're most important? Well, we all have. We all have. If any of us were to stand on a beach with God, then we would realize we can't bury our heads in the sand either. But the burning reality for us is that we're no better than Peter. We're just as bad and in many ways worse. We've talked about how we would expect to react in those circumstances. We'd want to inflict more pain. We'd want to make matters worse. But in reality, we want God to respond with grace, with mercy, with forgiveness. You see, what Jesus did was Jesus chose not to inflict pain on us, but to take pain on himself. The good shepherd laid down his life for his sheep. Jesus willingly laid down his life for you. He died to take the punishment that all humanity deserves for ignoring, denying, and rejected him. Jesus came to die for failures like Peter, and failures like Paul Robinson. He died for failures like all of us. He came to die for you, to give you new life, a fresh start, a chance to live knowing God, experiencing forgiveness, experiencing freedom. And the reality is that one day you won't meet God in a beach. You'll meet God in a courtroom. And the only hope on that day that you might have is a shepherd who laid down his life for you. So if that's something that you're more interested in finding out more about, keep coming back. Have a chat to me. Maybe read more of the story of Jesus in John's Gospel. But don't leave it there. Maybe take some time to think, to pray in your own heart, to talk to God. And then we're going to sing.